line, each stepping forward to receive a red flag before filing into the barracks.
Sal.
Sal! The voice was louder this time, more insistent. Talion blinked, turning around. Landon pressed a blue flag into his hand.
You're going to need that.
The swordsman opened his mouth to reply, but on this rare occasion, he found himself speechless.
Cadet Solaris, step forward.
Talion turned to Lieutenant Torrent, weakly displaying the balled-up blue flag that had been inserted into his grasp. The lieutenant raised an eyebrow, glancing at Landon.
Interesting. You sure you want to do that, Cadet?
Landon nodded.
Sir, if Talion didn't help me with the sigils test, I would not have passed. Please allow this.
The lieutenant frowned, raising a closed hand to his jaw, and then stepping forward. He snatched the blue flag out of Talion's hand.
Fine. Get inside, applicant Solaris. You won't have another chance. Be glad you have such loyal friends.
Talion took a shuddering breath and rushed inside the barracks. He didn't bother to change out of his uniform. He just sat on his bed and shivered. At dinner hour, Talion remained behind as most of the remaining cadets filed out of the barracks. He reclined on his flat pillow, lying on top of the blankets since he had yet to bathe. He had managed to kick off his boots, but beyond that, he had little energy to force himself to move. When the others were gone, Asphodel climbed up to the top bunk to sit beside where he was resting. Talion turned and gave her a quizzical look. Asphodel casually laid a hand on his shoulder, shaking her head.
You feel despair. Why?
I've just failed the last two challenges. I shouldn't even be here.
But you are, as you must be.
I'm not really in the mood for this kind of self-assured nonsense right now. If destiny had a hand in this, I feel like I should probably be breaking it. Asphodel frowned deeply.
You already are.
Talion sat up, crouching to avoid brushing his head against the ceiling. Okay, that's sufficiently ominous to make me curious. What are you talking about?
You are playing another's role, and playing the role differently than he would have.
Talion quirked an eyebrow. That's still pretty vague.
I am sorry.
The Dalaran looked away, her crystalline hair brushing against him as she turned.
Speaking can be difficult. I am seeing, hearing, too many things.
What do you mean by that? You've never answered our questions about the whole Oracle thing. Asphodel's shoulder slumped.
It is a gift, one might say, but a burden. My senses have many facets. I see now as you do, but I also see moments and minutes and hours into the future. Sometimes further if I strain myself.
Simultaneously? Asphodel nodded weakly. That must be maddening. Can you block it out?
Only to a minimal extent. I have learned to focus, as you might pay more attention to something directly in front of you than your peripheral vision. But if I close my eyes, I see nothing at all. If I block my ears, I do not hear any time frame. There is no method for filtering one or another completely.
Gods, I couldn't possibly handle that kind of burden. The pair was silent for a time, and Asphodel turned back toward him. Her eyes were closed.
Focusing on one sense or another can help. Do you mind?
He shook his head, and then remembered her eyes were closed.
No.
She smiled.
Good. You have many questions, as do I. You may ask first.
You said something about me taking someone else's place. What do you mean by that?
When I meet someone, I often gaze into their potential future. This may be intrusive, but it is instinctive to me, and I must keep myself safe. When I attempted to do this with you, I saw someone else entirely.
Talion took a deep breath. Does she mean Ain Darin, the god of blades? So many people have mistaken me for him, or his child. Could it be true? How do you know it's a different person? The Dalaran woman tilted her head downward.
He was nothing like you. everything and nothing alike.
After a pause, she spoke again.
He was regal, dominant, more nature than man. He had Arethri's eyes, verdant and deep as a forest, but he lacked Arethri's heart. And when I saw him, when I tried to see more, he turned his gaze to me.
She shivered.
And he smiled. It was not a smile of kindness. It was the smile of a hunter who had set his eyes upon prey. I have never dared to look into your future again.
The description was abstract, but something about it scratched at the back of his memory. The man in her vision sounded familiar. Familiar in a way that made his hand itch to reach for the sword at his side. But that's not Andoran, she described. The God of Blades is described as being a blue-eyed human, like I am.
You feel it too.
Asphodel grasped his hand, intertwining her fingers in his. There was something desperate in the contact, something pleading. Their fingers tightened around each other.
Yes.
His eyes closed, the image of the other man manifesting in his mind. It was not something Asphodel had given him, not a spell or a shared vision, but an awakened memory. The man, if such a word can describe a creature carved from the nightmares in the furthest recesses of his mind, had smiled at him, too. Talion squeezed her hand.
What is he? I do not know,
Asphodel whispered,
but I know that he is watching.
Chapter 18 Velus 6 Thoroughly Trapped. The first thing Velus realized was that she was cold. Without opening her eyes, she reached for her blanket, finding it missing. In her half-conscious haze, she barely processed the string of curses coming from somewhere to her right, or the scraping sound half a dozen yards distant. She frowned, groaning, and her eyes fluttered open. Her surroundings were unfamiliar and unnerving. A faint blue light illuminated her cell. She was lying atop an uneven gray stone floor, confined within a circle of glowing azure runes. Her only companions within the circle were a few cracked pieces of stone. The former queen's guard was still wearing her nightclothes, but an additional adornment graced her neck, a golden collar similarly etched with luminescent blue runes.
God's curse it, not more runes. I hate runes.
The cell itself was barely large enough for her to lie down. It was square in shape, with a gate of steel bars near her feet. The other three walls were the same gray stone as the floor. As she sat up, she realized that she could not see the primary source of the room's illumination. The runes on the floor and necklace were insufficient. The lack of a clear origin point for the light was disconcerting.
Ugh!
She moaned, rubbing at her head. She was pretty sure she hadn't been drinking last night, but she felt like alcohol had sucker-punched her brain when she wasn't looking.
Velus! You awake? I'd know that half-conscious moan anywhere.
The sound was coming from the opposite side of the stone wall on her right side.
Shut up, Landon! You're too loud and I'm too tired.
She rubbed at her temples, but the effort was mostly in vain.
We might need to talk, given that we're, you know, in some kind of prison.
She sighed.
Yes, I'd gathered that, thanks.
Velus? Landon? That you over there?
Talion was whispering from somewhere beyond Velus's bars. His idea of whispering was about twice the volume of Landon's speaking voice, and Velus was unable to stifle a snicker. Leaning closer to the edge of her circle, she didn't want to cross it without determining the circle's function, if any. She could see through her bars well enough to note another set of bars about 2 yards beyond her own. Talion was standing in a similar circle, shirtless, wearing a collar. It was hard to tell with the dim light, but she thought his collar might have been silver rather than gold. He waved at her, and she returned the gesture and then stood up.
Hey, Sal! I like the new look. You should try it more often.
Velus smirked, but with her headache slowly subsiding, she was beginning to process the situation and search for solutions.
Anyone remember how we got here?
Landon asked. She thought she could hear him moving around on the opposite side of the wall. No, and don't leave the circle until we figure out what it does, she instructed, turning toward Landon.
Circle? What circle?
Landon is not in a circle.
The voice was female, and it took Velis a moment to place it. She had rarely heard Asphodel speak, and when the Dalaran woman had, it was rarely more than two or three words at a time.
I am, however.
Asphodel? Talion was whispering too loudly again. Can you read the runes on the amulet, or the circle?
No. Also, I am not wearing an amulet.
Velis knelt back down, inspecting the runes.
That's core for strength, lice for sacrifice. Can't read that one or that one. Car, maybe? Protection. Yeah, that seems right. Probably a pretty typical barrier circle.
The former Queensguard frowned,
except with no visible power source. There should be Dominion essence somewhere nearby, most likely within the ritual circle itself.
She looked at a pair of loose rocks dubiously, but quickly concluded that no one in their right mind would bother disguising Dominion essence as random stones.
It's probably drawing from my new apparel. There could be Dominion essence in a position I can't see, like on the inside or around the back. Okay, barrier circle. I can deal with that. There may be a more pressing problem.
Velis picked up one of the stray rocks, thinking.
So, guys, how'd we get in here?
That's what I was asking, Landon complained. I just went to sleep and woke up here.
This is clearly some kind of test. Talion was kneeling and inspecting his own runes now.
Or another one of my weird dreams. You been having weird dreams?
Landon asked. Velis smirked, flicking the rock into the ring. Ping! A translucent, blue-white field appeared, blocking the tiny rock from escaping the circle. The deflected rock rolled across the ground, landing near her feet.
Definitely a barrier, at the least. Might have other functions.
As intrigued as I might be about Sal's dreams, especially if they involve the four of us half-naked in a prison, I'm pretty sure I'm real. Maybe I'm dreaming, but this doesn't seem like my kind of dream, for the most part.
Asphodel sighed loudly enough to cut Velis off.
We are not dreaming. I would know.
Not sure what her logic is for that, but sure, we'll go with that. They do call her an oracle. Maybe dream sorcery is on her list.
Well, if we're really here, that means either our room has been pretty seriously changed or we've been teleported. Leaning toward the ladder, Talion tapped at the floor near one of the runes with a single finger.
I really, really hate being teleported. Possibly more than I hate runes.
Velis rubbed at her forehead.
Our cell arrangements seem to mirror our beds. Landon is next to me, and Talion is next to Asphodel. Asphodel, have you seen your, guards?
Tespol and Kolask are not my guards.
And no, they are not here.
Velis frowned.
Those two are sleeping closer to my bed than Talion and Asphodel. Why are they missing? If Talion is right and this is a test, it would be logical to include the whole platoon or segments of it that are adjacent to one another. Could they have failed out? Or perhaps they're in another part of the dungeon? It's an inconsistency, much like Landon not having a circle or a collar. Maybe that's not the real Landon. Maybe I'm dreaming. The only authority telling me that I'm not dreaming is someone that could just be another dream. But I guess that line of thought isn't really going to be useful. I'm going to break this place and get the rush out either way.
Talion put a hand on his collar. I'm going to break this.
I love it when he reminds me of me.
Do not,
Asphodel said, just before Talion screamed, falling to the floor and beginning to spasm uncontrollably. Velis tensed, taking a step forward before she realized she had nearly stepped out of her circle. She barely stopped herself, gritting her teeth as she watched helplessly as Talion twitched for several seconds before lying still.
Sal?
She asked, staring at his fallen body. He made no reply.
They couldn't have killed him. It's just a test. He's going to be fine. It's not real. It can't be real.
These colors are triggered by the use of sorcery,
Asphodel said without a hint of emotion in her tone. Velis clenched her fists.
Rushing useful information there, chatty. Thanks.
saved us all a bunch of trouble.
I could not be certain until he activated it, but it seemed logical.
Footsteps. Heavy ones at that. Asphodel went silent as soon as the sounds began to approach. Velis focused on the sounds, identifying any individual characteristics she could. There was a slight scrape with each step, and a long pause between each, indicating that the person approaching was most likely walking slowly and wearing sabatons. As the first creature came into view, she realized she was only mostly right. The figure's armor was black as void, with violent spikes protruding from the knees and elbows. The material was reflective, but with a glossy look, and Velis suspected it was some kind of stone similar to obsidian rather than metal. Near the neck and on the gauntlets, she saw runes etched into the surface. They were glowing with red light. All in all, the image looked like a child's nightmare of one of the Thorngard. She might have laughed if someone had tried to describe the figure to her, but when it turned to look straight at her, and she saw red glowing spots rather than eyes, something sank in her stomach.
The prisoners will behave.
Its voice was a deep, grating sound that made her shiver. It was only after a moment that she processed the foreign sorcery invading her body, sapping at her will. Every instinct told her to push the poison out of her veins, but she resisted, knowing that activating her sorcery resistance could potentially leave her in the same state as Talion, or worse. Mercifully, it turned away from Velis after staring at her for several painful moments. She found herself sitting, shivering, but her mind still worked.
He's wearing a sword on his left hip. No other obvious weapons. Obvious keys hanging from belt on right side of hip.
Velis's relief that the knight was looking away from her was short-lived. His next target was Talion, still unmoving on his cell's floor.
They might kill him in there. I mean, at least in the simulation. It's still just a test. He's fine. But seriously, I need to save him right now. Two problems. Well, two main problems. Barrier and a door. Think!
She flicked another pebble, twisting her lip as she made an observation. The lead knight removed the keys from his belt, unlocking Talion's cell door. Velis grabbed a larger rock and began scratching something into the floor of her cell. The runes on the black-clad knight's gauntlet flickered, and the barrier circle around Talion flashed into visibility for a moment, and then shattered apart. The knight reached down with his left hand, grabbed Talion's collar, and dragged him out of the cell.
"Hey! Stop! We'll cooperate!" Landon called out. "Just tell us what you need!"
The knight paused for a moment, turning toward Landon's cell.
"The prisoner will be silent while punishment is administered."
The knight pulled Talion upward from the floor with his left hand, putting his right hand on Talion's forehead.
"Awaken."
The runes on the knight's gauntlet flashed, and Talion shuddered again, though he did not scream this time. The swordsman slumped forward weakly, his eyes fluttering open.
"Good. You will now be punished."
Velis stood up, gripping her collar with her left hand.
"Yeah, that might have to wait."
The red-eyed knight turned his gaze toward Velis as she approached the cell door.
"For the future, you might want to construct your rituals with the runes on the outside of the barrier. If they're on the inside, someone might, you know, change how they work."
"I'm going to regret this later."
Pulse!
It was just a flicker of sorcery, the merest hint of an application of the Dominion of Motion. Enhanced a thousandfold by the repurposed ritual circle, however, it was strong enough to rip the bar she pointed at straight out of the stone and catapult it into the knight, slamming into his right arm. The knight staggered a step toward Talion's cell as the bar deflected off his armor, clattering down the hall. The application of force should have shattered the arm of an ordinary man, armored or not. The attack was not, unfortunately, potent enough to make the knight drop his prisoner. It was, however, enough to activate her collar. Intense heat flared to life around her neck, searing into her flesh. She screamed out of instinct in spite of having been prepared for the pain. It was excruciating, but she had expected it to be.
"Not what I expected, but it will do."
She sensed the dominion of light burning her flesh, visualized the places that the collar contacted her skin, and quickly sensed the power source on the back of her neck. Her fingers burned as they found the stone, and she pointed her other hand at the knight. Expel! A blinding ray of incandescent heat blasted out of her outstretched fingers, slamming into the knight's chest. The knight released his grip on Talion, turning toward Velis as golden cracks began to appear in his breastplate. Velis continued to channel the amulet's light, gritting her teeth in agony. Her hand and neck were no longer being burned, but the muscles in her right arm began to twitch as she expended her own essence to redirect the necklace's power. The knight reached down with a gauntleted hand, briefly blocking the beam as he marched toward her cell. Velis shifted the light upward, hoping to blind him, but when the beam hit the runes near his neck, she felt an instant of connection with a greater force, and then the beam faltered and died. Velis fell to her knees, shivering, her right arm numb. Shit, shit, I should have realized that those runes on his neck are another amulet like mine. Triggered some kind of feedback when I hit it. The knight unceremoniously tore the door off her cell. Work, legs, work. If I can stand, I can fight. Her legs just trembled with her effort. As the knight raised a gauntleted hand to strike, the best she could do was to move her left arm in the way in an effort to block. The knight's sword ripped out of its scabbard. Talion had grabbed it from behind. The knight turned just in time for the sword to slam into its weakened breastplate. He staggered backward, nearly falling into Velis, which put him in a convenient position. Velis slapped her burned left hand on the front of the breastplate. Pulse! The breastplate exploded, shards of blackened material scattering throughout the cell. Talion struck in the next instant, slamming the sword into a green crystal that had been housed within the armor. The knight shuddered for a few moments and collapsed. Velis fell to the floor beside him.
God's fucking goats, that really hurt!
She curled up on the floor, cradling her numb right arm, which somehow felt even worse than her burned hand. Talion knelt down, which looked like a sympathetic gesture at first, until she realized he was inspecting the fallen knight instead of her. She glanced at what he was looking at. There was no body inside the armor, just the gemstone that Talion had damaged, which was lodged inside a metal frame. He frowned, turning to her next.
Nice move there. That light thing was pretty incredible. Saved my skin.
Okay, your momentary lapse is almost forgiven. Almost.
Mm-hmm,
she managed to reply. You look about as bad as I feel. Any critical injuries that need immediate attention?
All of them. All of my injuries require your complete and immediate attention, Reshit.
No, get the others out of the cells.
Talion nodded. I'll be back for you in a moment. He stumbled away, dragging the sword across the floor with him. Velis got a better look at the weapon this time. It was black-bladed, resembling the armor, with blue runes on the surface. The sound of the stone grinding against stone was one more source of pain, but there were so many she could barely keep track. She heard the sound of keys turning in a lock, and Landon was at her side a moment later.
Hey, hang in there.
He sat down next to her, setting her head on his lap.
It's going to be okay.
Normally she would have complained about Landon's coddling, but she was hurting enough that a little human contact was more of a comfort than the minor injury to her pride.
Besides, that light thing had been pretty rushing amazing.
We need to move,
Asphodel's voice coming from her cell, always killing her brief moments of happiness.
There are more coming.
Talion came back, but instead of moving to her, he knelt by the knight again.
Fine, I see how it is. He can be your new sparring partner.
Landon patted her head, and she closed her eyes appreciatively. The sounds of clanking a few moments later jarred her eyes back open. Talion was hitting the knight's wrist with the sword for some unfathomable reason.
That guy was a jerk, but I really don't think this is the time for venting your frustrations,
Velis muttered.
Asphodel is still in a ritual circle. I think the gauntlets can shut them down.
Talion continued tapping away, but he didn't seem to make much progress.
Oh, that makes a kind of sense, I guess.
Landon sighed.
Let me...
Velis felt her head moving and realized that Landon had set her head back down on the ground.
Bah, I was comfortable.
Landon was warding Talion away, and the swordsman moved to take up a guarding position in the hall. Meanwhile, her former Queensguard companion began twisting the knight's wrist, which, after a few moments, she realized was turning in a complete circle. After nearly a minute of hideous scraping noises, the gauntlet came free.
The gauntlet was screwed on? Seriously?
Velis let out a sigh. She was starting to regain some of the feeling in her legs, at least, but her right arm still felt like lead.
I really shouldn't let that, of all the things that have been happening, be the one that surprises me.
Catch, Sal!
Landon tossed Talion the gauntlet, and Talion nodded and moved to Asphodel's cell. A flash of light, and a few moments later, Asphodel and Talion were standing nearby.
We must go quickly. I will carry her.
The Dalaran girl knelt down and slipped her arms under Velis before she could object, lifting her with no apparent difficulty. Still barely capable of movement, Velis just slipped her left arm around Asphodel's neck and tried to hold herself in place as best she could. The group stepped into the hallway between the cells, Talion still carrying the sword in his right hand and the gauntlet in his left. Unable to take physical action, Velis let her mind contribute to the problem.
Sal, try the gauntlet on your amulet.
Talion turned to her. If this activates it again, you're the one who has to carry me.
Deal.
She managed a smile. Talion tapped the gauntlet against his amulet. Nothing visibly happened. He frowned. Velis remembered the power source.
Try it on the back.
Talion reached around behind his neck with the gauntlet, which looked pretty ridiculous, and scratched the fingers against the back of the amulet. Velis heard a click, and the amulet fell right off him, landing on the floor. The blue runes on the surface continued to glow.
Huh,
Talion muttered, kicking the fallen amulet. Landon leaned down and picked it up.
This might actually be useful later, if we can figure out how it works. Also, that gem in the armor was pretty interesting. Asphodel, can you carry this?
Asphodel tensed, but accepted the amulet.
We have no time. This is the way to go.
Asphodel turned to the right, taking a step forward. Asphodel wasn't wearing an amulet of her own, which was interesting. Velis had simply assumed she'd be shackled with one as well, given that she was clearly a sorcerer with some kind of divination ability. Either that, or she just liked bossing people around and letting on that she knew everything, but in this case the former seemed more likely, as amusing as the latter would be.
Why the discrepancy? Well, it's not important at the moment.
Landon, get the gem and catch up to us. We're going to start moving. You hear any noise, you run right after us,
Velis instructed.
Got it!
Landon went back to the cell and began tinkering with the breastplate. Talion took the front, raising the stone blade in a high stance, and Asphodel carried Velis right behind him. The hallway led on for an implausibly long time, mostly stone walls on each side with occasional empty cells every few hundred yards. Talion paused in his step, resting the sword on the ground.
We've gone far enough. We need to wait for Landon to catch up.
That would be unwise.
Asphodel closed her eyes.
Very unwise.
Velis fidgeted in Asphodel's arms. Her legs were feeling more or less functional at this point, but her right arm was in similar shape to before. Catching the cue, Asphodel set her down.
Thanks for the ride. Mind filling us in on what you know?
The Overseer is coming. If we push on now, we can reach the exit before she comes across our path. If we wait for Landon, we will encounter her.
Velis stretched her legs, feeling tiny pinpricks of pain in her muscles.
That doesn't sound so bad, now that we're out of the cells. I think we could handle another one of those guys. Sal?
I could take maybe 10.
He nodded magnanimously.
20 for me,
Velis grinned.
We got a minute before this Overseer gets to us. Yes, but I would not advise... Sal, can you make me a weapon from the bars on one of these cells?
Talion nodded, setting the gauntlet down.
Yeah, I think I can. My head is still feeling pretty swimmy, though, and any kind of use of sorcery is going to slow me down for a fight if we get into one.
Oh, I won't hold it against you if I have to pull all the weight again.
Talion rolled his eyes. Fine, you get a dagger. I'll make Landon a pair of swords. Velis folded her arms.
Don't be such a poor sport. Just pull off a bar and make me a spear. It'll probably be the easiest thing to make anyway.
Not a bad idea, actually. Talion moved to a nearby cell, putting a hand on a bar and closed his eyes. The bar separated from the remainder of the cage. He set the sword down, repeating the process with another bar, and then brought the two bars together. After another moment of concentration, the bars merged together and then reshaped into a spear. The swordsman set the spear down, putting a hand over his abdomen.
That hit me even harder than I expected. I must not have eaten in a while.
You have not? Thanks, Asphodel. You're always a font of useful information.
Velis picked up the spear with her burned hand, which, fortunately, wasn't burned too badly to grip the weapon. Talion wobbled slightly on his feet, leaning against the wall.
I think I need a moment.
You can rest easy now, I'm here.
Landon's voice came from down the hall, and he came into sight a few moments later. He held the cracked green crystal in his left hand.
A spear! Nice, can I get one?
I don't think my stomach can handle another spear. I could offer you a metal bar, maybe.
Hey, I'll take what I can get.
Talion pulled another bar out of the nearest cell, offering it to Landon, and nearly falling over in the process.
Maybe you should hold on to that, actually. You're looking a little wobbly there.
Talion frowned.
But I want the sword. I like swords.
I know you do, big guy. You can have it back later.
Landon picked up the sword.
Asphodel, can you get the gauntlet?
Yes.
Asphodel picked the gauntlet up.
She is coming.
Scraping noises, not unlike those made by the knight, but more in number. Velis counted 6, 7, 8, 9. They were not footsteps. They were the sounds of chains dragging along the stone floor as the overseer floated down the hall toward them. Her plate armor lacked the spines and ridges of the knight, but only his gauntlets and neck had been marked with runes. She had them written across every surface on her body. Her hands, neck, and helmet glowed with scarlet glyphs, but the runes on her chest, legs, and shoulders were blue. Asphodel threw the gauntlet at the overseer immediately. The 9 chains rose from the floor, and it was only at that moment that Velis realized that each of the chains ended in a dagger-like blade.
Oh, that's not good at all.
The chains slapped the gauntlet out of the air, and it tumbled to the floor. Talion took a step back, moving into a defensive position with his metal bar.
When I said 10, just to clarify, I meant 10 of the normal ones.
No need to be modest, Sal.
Velis nudged him in the ribs.
It's not like you.
You will abandon your weapons and surrender immediately,
the overseer demanded. Unlike the knight, the voice sounded like an ordinary human woman. It might have been familiar, but an itching at the back of her mind seemed to prevent that thought from fully forming.
Well, that's clearly not going to happen. How about we trade places and you surrender?
Talion made a swishing gesture with his makeshift staff to help elucidate the proposal.
Yeah, that's more like the usual, Sal.
Velis grinned.
Prisoners have refused to surrender. They will be executed.
Velis had expected the chains to be fast, but she hadn't expected them to tear the air apart. She barely managed to parry the two that came her way, and it looked like one of them managed to slice a gash in Sal's side. The other 6 went for Landon. Landon deflected the first 2 before charging forward, dancing to the side of the hall as 2 more flew past him, and then jumping onto the wall and kicking himself off of it to dodge another, and finally swinging the black blade downward to smash the last chain out of his way. He landed in a tumble, rolling behind the overseer and swinging at her back. The chains repositioned immediately, blocking his strike. Landon cursed, backing away, now on the opposite side of the overseer from the rest of the group. Her attention seemed focused on him for the moment, and Velis suddenly realized why. Along with processing why Asphodel had thrown the gauntlet. Asphodel picked the gauntlet back up, advancing. Velis glanced at Talion, who was holding the pole in one hand and holding the other to his side to stem the blood from his wound.
Let me see that.
Velis walked over to him.
Can't tell how hard you were hit if you're covering it. Never mind me. Fight happening. Go get her. I'll be right behind you.
Velis nodded. Landon was doing admirably to deflect the chains, but he only had a single weapon, and fighting while backing up was never easy. Velis managed to close in just before Landon took a hit to the ribs from a chain, knocking him backward. She jammed her spear into the overseer's back, but it barely reacted to the strike. Asphodel threw the gauntlet again. 5 chains whipped around to deflect it. Velis had to duck to avoid the projectile.
"Do you want to stop doing that?"
"No," Velis growled, lashing out at the overseer, her spear once again bouncing off the armor.
"Asphodel, what exactly are you—" "Oh, gods, it's so simple,"
Talion trailed off.
"Landon, keep her busy. Asphodel, bring me the gauntlet, and Velis, come here."
"You should not do this."
Asphodel gave Talion the gauntlet, but she had a disapproving expression.
"Yeah, I'll feel terrible, but it'll work."
Talion laid his staff down, turning the gauntlet around.
"Velis, stick the spear into the gauntlet where the hand would go."
Velis blinked.
"You're joking."
"He is not joking."
Velis stuck the spear into the gauntlet, and Talion closed his eyes. The wrist portion of the gauntlet tightened around the spear, sticking into place. Talion broke into a racking cough, letting go of the gauntlet. When he recovered from the coughing fit, a trickle of blood was dripping out of his nose.
"Now," he said, "go hit the blue parts."
It finally clicked. Her job was hilariously simple. Velis spun, charging her target.
"Landon, I'm going to hit her in a second. When she's distracted, go for her head."
4 chains shot at her, but Velis didn't care.
Surge.
The burst of momentum shot her past the bladed chains, driving her one-armed spear attack straight into the overseer's torso. The red runes on the gauntlet flashed as they contacted the blue runes on the armor. Both flickered and died. The overseer didn't stop moving. The 5 remaining chains went for Landon, and he wasn't fast enough to avoid them all this time. One of them speared his left arm and forced him to drop the gem. Another hit his right leg, knocking him to the floor. Unable to make his swing, Landon threw the sword. The overseer ducked. The sword missed. As the sword fell, the overseer spun around, the chains that had been aimed at Landon whipping around toward Velis. She managed to knock 3 of them upward, but the others were coming in at different angles. Asphodel stepped in front of her, grabbing the 2 remaining chains out of the air with her left hand. She pulled, and the overseer came within reach. With her other hand, Asphodel pushed Talion's collar around the overseer's neck. The blue collar met with red. The overseer's head fell off. It was, more accurately, only a helmet. As the overseer tumbled to the ground, Velis noted that much like the knight, the overseer was just a hollow suit of armor on the inside. Once it was down, Landon picked himself off the floor and quickly struck each of the remaining red sets of runes with the sword. They dimmed and faded almost immediately. Velis repeated the process using her gauntlet spear against the blue runes, just to make sure the headless monster wasn't going to start moving again. Landon knelt down and began to pry open the breastplate.
"You know, it's rude to try to get under a lady's garments like that, Lan."
Velis leaned against her spear, curious about what he'd find. It took him a good minute to find a spot where he could pry open the breastplate, during which time Talion managed to limp over to the rest of them, and Velis remembered his injury with a pang of guilt. She turned to face him.
"You okay, Sal?"
He was still holding his side, leaning heavily on his makeshift staff.
"No, not really. Asphodel, we almost out of here?"
"Yes."
Velis reached up and rubbed her neck beneath the amulet.
"Best thing you've said all morning. Hey, Sal, tap my neck."
Talion seemed to get her meaning, taking the gauntlet spear and prodding the back of her amulet. Like his, her amulet unlocked at the gauntlet's touch, slipping off. She caught it in her burned hand, which wasn't feeling quite as burned anymore. Dubiously, she looked at it. Her skin wasn't actually damaged.
Just a mental effect, she realized. I was never actually injured. How did I fail to notice? Oh, right. When the guard spoke, he did something to my head. Not to mention whatever they did to me when I was asleep.
I could have all sorts of spells on me, since I wasn't awake to detect the shift in my dominions. Well, that makes this simulation at least slightly more ethical. I was going to pound someone's face in if they actually electrocuted Sal that badly. Still, looks like it hurt like a knife to the gut. But it's no wonder he's up and walking again if it was just pain and not a real injury.
The group took a minute to breathe while Landon worked to pry a golden gemstone out of the overseer's chest. Talion was pressing a hand against the injury on his side, and Velis approached to take a closer look. The wound was real. It wasn't particularly deep, but when she touched a smear of the blood on his chest, her fingers came back wet. Fortunately, the cut didn't appear to be particularly deep, but it was still a potential danger if they didn't find him medical attention soon.
Maybe I need to bludgeon one of the instructors after all. Why would his injury be real if mine wasn't? Did the electricity break his shield, or was he never protected at all?
The blood on his mouth was equally real, as was the numbness in her right arm. They had both overspent themselves on sorcery, and if this was a test, they'd probably be in some trouble for it. Once the golden gem was secured, the group made their way further down the hall until they reached a door covered in blue runes, which, predictably, opened at a tap from the gauntlet. Landon swung the door wide, revealing brilliant daylight outside. Together, they stepped into the light.
Chapter 19. Jonan 5. Festering Wound. Jonan watched as his family burned.
"Don't let us see me. Don't let her find me," he prayed.
The boy stared intently through the space between the wardrobe's doors. Packed between clothing, he was concealed as best he could manage, but he knew that a cursory examination would reveal his presence. And then he would be added to the still-burning pile in the living room. The smoke from the flames was steadily filling the entire home, but their murderer remained within, kicking something toward the pile. The latest of her victims was small, smaller even than Jonan himself. He forced his eyes shut, but he could not will the image away. The hateful orange-red glow burned his eyes, even as the smoke seared into his lungs. His eyes reopened. As he watched the latest kindling beginning to catch, he found that he could not associate what he was seeing with what had once been his sister. There was enough remaining of her face to be recognizable, but he could not believe that it was her, that it was little Chell in that motionless form. He could see nothing human left in that husk. He could see nothing human in the woman that had burned his family either. She raised her hands to the fire, grinning, as if warming herself at a hearth. The glow of the flames illuminated the details of her face, thin and angular and punctuated eyes that mirrored the conflagration in color. He did not wonder at the murderer's motives. Her smile and behavior were sufficient to inform him of everything he needed to know. She was a predator, and they, unfortunate creatures, were merely her prey. Reaching toward the flames, she seemed to tear a fragment of the fire away with her bare hand, rolling it within her fingers. The flames traveled up her arm, wrapping around it in a wreath, but they did not burn her clothing or skin. Her songbird laughter echoed as she turned and stormed toward the wardrobe where Jonan remained hidden.
"Don't see me! Don't see me!" he willed.
She flung the doors of the cabinet wide.
"Why are you hiding, Jonan?"
Lavender smiled at him, caressing his left arm and setting it ablaze. He screamed as his exposed flesh began to burn. She shook her head, making a disapproving noise.
"Jonan, Jonan, I will always find you."
Jonan's screams faltered as he inhaled the smoke, and his voice faltered into a cough as the flames spread from his arm to his shoulder.
"There, there."
She patted his head with her burning hand, spreading the flames to his hair. The clothes around him caught as he brushed against them and fell to the floor.
"It will all be over soon."
The scribe shivered as consciousness slowly returned. The sensation of flames lingered in his limbs, but lacked the sharpness of the bolt's initial impact. His eyes fumbled feebly to open, revealing a dark and blurred world around him. Instinctively, he tried to move his arm to adjust his spectacles, but no arm responded to his command. A moment of panic gripped him as he twisted to the side, trying to get a better look. He heard a sharp breath from nearby.
"Jonin, don't move."
The voice pounded into his mind, forcing his eyes shut. He laid back down, feeling skin pressed against his forehead a moment later.
"Hey, relax, slow down. You shouldn't be moving yet. You're in bad shape."
"My arm," he managed to mumble.
"It's going to feel cold for a while, I'm sorry. It's the best I can do for now."
The pounding in his head continued, but a dubious manifestation of consciousness was returning to him. He recognized the voice of the speaker as Riala, and presumably she was talking about chilling his arm with ice sorcery.
Is that a good idea?
He wasn't really conscious enough to be sure. And if my arm is supposed to be cold, why does it still feel like it's burning inside?
You probably shouldn't try to talk yet either.
Something wet was on his forehead now. A damp cloth, he realized after a moment. That at least seemed normal enough. Having a fever made sense when he was poisoned.
Oh, right.
I'm poisoned.
Poison? What's happening?
He heard Riala take a deep breath.
I did what I could, but I don't have much left in me after all that fighting. We managed to chase off the rest of the attackers, though, and get you inside. Some of the guards went and got Aladia.
You're too low. Loud.
Slow down. My head hurts. Sorry.
Riala lowered her voice to a more tolerable volume.
I'll be brief. Aladir and I have been trying to keep you stable, but we haven't been able to cure the poison. It's necrotizing the tissue around the wound. I've been able to slow the process somewhat by chilling the area, and Aladir has been treating the damage near the injury, but we're more worried about the poison that spread throughout your blood before I managed to chill the area.
Jonin frowned. That sounded pretty awful.
Can't you, water sorcery it?
The sorceress sighed.
I'm not very good at that, and I just dehydrated myself pretty seriously making new Dominion essence of water before the battle.
Antidotes?
The ones you were working on all looked like they were for ingested poisons, so as far as Aladir and I could tell, neither of us is a poison expert.
Jonin nodded weakly.
You're right. Drinking a potion isn't going to help anything in my blood. Not much, anyway. And putting Dominion essence of water straight into my blood would be deadly.
His body felt weak, lifeless.
I need you to help me, Riala. Can you help me?
You're not going to like what I have planned.
He tensed his jaw.
I'm not losing the arm, no.
You might have to, regardless of what I do, but that's not the plan. I need you to follow my instructions exactly. This would be your best chance.
Oh, that sounds promising. I can already tell this is going to be loads of fun. He bit into his tongue, just a little bit, deliberately, to make a distraction from the far worse pain in his arm and side. It didn't help.
Talk.
Aladir is going to check on you soon. He'll do a little more life sorcery on your arm. When he's here, I need you to ask him to go get someone else to help with your treatment. Liara Dianis.
His mind was still swimming. But even in his half-conscious state, that name sounded unusual.
That's almost your name.
Mother? Or a sister, perhaps?
She's my sister.
Not seeing why this is such a problem.
Why haven't you asked her yourself? You can't tell Aladir I asked. Or that she's my sister. And Liara can't know I've been here, at least not until I tell her.
Not seeing why you haven't asked Aladir directly...
If you ask, he's not going to be all that suspicious. Just say she's well known for treating poisons and diseases. That's true, and Aladir will almost certainly already know that. If I asked, he'd probably notice our resemblance, in spite of the efforts I've taken to change how I look.
Why wouldn't he have gone to see her already on his own, if she's an expert?
People don't usually just randomly go asking strangers for help, Jonin. He's not going to ask her on his own, because he's planning to go ask the Paladins of Taos to send someone in the morning.
You need to convince him to bring Liara here instead, and to do so immediately.
Because she's more skilled or something?
No, because she's more likely to know the most efficient treatment for this particular poison.
Why?
Because I think she made it.
You have got to be fucking kidding me. Okay, I want to ask you why you think that, but on the other hand, I pretty much feel like I'm roasting in a fire right now, so let's save that for later. Is it safe to say she's not actually one of the assassins herself?
Probably.
Okay, I'm a little slow right now, so let me see if I'm getting this right. You want me to convince Eladia to go get someone who may or may not be one of the people who tried to kill us in the first place. I also can't tell him that this was your idea, that she's your sister, or presumably that she might be one of the assassins. And he already has another plan that seems infinitely more rational on the surface.
Yes.
You were a little off before, Riella. You said I wasn't going to like this plan. That would be somewhat like saying I wouldn't like being actually lit on fire, in addition to the more metaphorical internal fire I'm already experiencing, and also that the fire was somehow made out of bees, an infinite number of bees. That's more like the scale of how much I abhor this idea, Riella.
Glad to see you're feeling more like yourself.
I'll be quiet and get the paladin so I can try to convince him that your sister is single and ripe to be impressed by his masculine healing abilities.
Actually, she's only a couple years younger than he is, so that's not necessarily a bad...
Just go get Eladia before I decide that cutting the arm off is the easier route!
By the time a soft knock sounded on the door to Jonin's room, the pain in his arm had shifted from consistent burning to an agonizing throbbing that pulsed with his heartbeat. Making the effort to ignore the pounding just drew his attention to it further, and the sound of the knocking, out of sync with the beating of his heart, somehow worsened the effect, like discordant notes in a song.
Not sure what the point of knocking is, since I'm not exactly going to turn away visitors.
"Come on in!" he greeted with false cheer.
The door opened slowly, cautiously, a moment later. Eladir Tetherial was largely unremarkable to Jonin, as someone who had spent much of his life among Rethri. A hair taller than average, and with forest-green eyes, he moved with a certain timidness that masked the grace that Jonin had seen him demonstrate in earlier encounters. This normalcy was not, however, why Jonin felt that something about Eladir was implausibly familiar. The paladin's face, his eyes, even the voice struck the scribe as being a mirror to someone he had once known, but could not place. It was not the pain robbing him of clarity of mind. He had sensed this same fragment of certainty with each encounter. Fortunately, that was not the most pressing concern on his mind.
"How are you feeling?"
Jonin groaned.
"Come closer. I can't hear you over the sound of my life slipping away."
The Rethri gave a sharp smile.
"Glad to see you've still got your sense of humor."
He sat in the same chair next to the bed that Riella had used, but with a slight lean toward the right, most likely caused by his scabbard brushing against the floor.
"Let me take a look at that arm."
"Please, by all means. You might not want to buy it now, though. I hear it's going to be on sale soon. Half off."
Eladir rolled his eyes, which looked somewhat awkward to Jonin due to the Rethri lack of sclera, and leaned forward. The paladin put his hands on the injured limb, frowning as he moved his fingers across the surface. Jonin frowned too, even though he couldn't sense whatever Eladir was diagnosing. He could barely feel the other man's hands against his skin. He knew intellectually that that was probably due to the persistent chilling effect from Riala's sorcery, but nevertheless, the lack of sensation was deeply disturbing.
"The necrosis is spreading in spite of our best efforts. I'll do what I can to repair some of the damage, but life sorcery is best at accelerating natural healing, and natural healing can't treat this kind of injury. Essentially, I need to force your body to try to rebuild the corrupted areas. It's inefficient and unreliable, but it will slow the deterioration of the limb."
Jonin nodded from his bed, sensing that his usual sarcasm wouldn't be an appropriate response to the diagnosis. He fumbled a more applicable reply.
"I know life sorcery isn't easy,
and that you'll pay a cost for helping me.
Thank you.
Just wish I could do more. Hold still for a bit.
Aladir began to hum softly, closing his eyes and slipping his left hand under Jonin's arm. He pressed two fingers of each hand against the entry and exit wounds, and Jonin watched as a golden-green glow manifested on Aladir's hands.
No incantation? That's unusual for a Vel-
Shit! Shit, that hurts!
Jonin still couldn't feel the pressure of Aladir's hands, but the flames within his arm burned with renewed vigor. Gritting his teeth, he resisted the urge to complain, though only barely. Minutes passed, though in his state Jonin had no capability to count them. By the time the glow subsided, the scribe was shivering in his bed and Aladir's forehead was matted with sweat. A trickle of blood dripped from the paladin's nose, which he wiped away with a cloth from one of his pockets.
"I'm sorry. I don't believe I can continue right now."
Aladir broke into coughing after he spoke, covering his mouth with the other side of his now blood-stained handkerchief. The scribe sat up slightly, moving his right arm to clutch at his left, which was still burning with agony. He could see blackened veins within the arm, which showed no sign of recovering in spite of Aladir's treatment.
"Thanks. You've done more than enough."
It felt like a lie, but he felt the need to express his gratitude.
"It's never enough. Ironic, given the words of my house."
Aladir shook his head. Jonin wasn't familiar with the reference, so he failed to find an immediate reply. Aladir stood on wobbling legs, turning to leave.
"My healing is not the right solution here. I'll see to it that we find you someone who has expertise at treating poisons in the morning."
"Liara Dianis!"
Jonin spat out the name, which had been hovering near the front of his mind, waiting for an opportunity to escape. It occurred to him afterward that a bit of context might have been helpful to avoid suspicion.
"Hmm?"
Aladir turned back toward Jonin, resting a hand on the back of the chair where he had been sitting.
"Friend of a friend,"
Jonin explained. It was easier for him to be deceptive while hiding within the shadow of truth.
"Please, go see her. I've heard she's an expert at these things, and I'm not sure my arm is going to last until the Dawnfire rises."
The paladin raised a hand to his forehead, wiping away sweat.
"I'm not sure that would be wise. Even ignoring the late hour, Liara is, in spite of her talents, quite inexperienced."
"Hmm. He already knows her. That could make this easier or harder."
"And given her age, I'm not certain on how her father would react to my midnight arrival and request for her to help me with a potentially dangerous procedure."
Jonin ground his jaw. Playing mind games to get a life-saving procedure was not what I envisioned when Lydia asked me to help her with this. Nevertheless, he put on his most charming, friendly tone.
"Oh, come now, Aladir. You're a handsome fellow and from a well-respected family. At worst, her father might take this as being an overture of interest in his daughter, who would probably make an excellent match for you, given your mutual interests in healing."
"That's part of why I'm worried. Tyrion has approached me about taking Liara as a research partner twice now. In Rethri society, that's a thinly veiled way of trying to imply a romantic match."
"I'm not sure I see the problem."
Aladir tapped his fingers on the chair.
"It would be discourteous to do something that could be construed as a false demonstration of romantic interest."
"Be patient, Jonin. Just because the paladin is bad at relationship talk doesn't mean he's not trying to help you."
Jonin unconsciously rubbed his forehead.
"Okay, just tell them that I, as the patient, asked for her specifically because of her excellent reputation."
Aladir stood up a little straighter.
"And a friend told you about her?"
"Right." "Shit, did he put it together?" "Besides, House Dianis is as famous at sorcery in general as House Tetherial is for healing. I even thought about going to the Dianis University when I was younger."
The paladin nodded at that. It was a valid explanation.
"If I end up with a wife because of this, you're going to owe me an apology."
The paladin's tone was so deadpan that Jonin couldn't be certain if it was a joke. Nevertheless, he laughed, and kept laughing until Aladir turned to leave the room.
"Deal!"
Jonin was already awake when his next set of visitors arrived. This was not due to any improvement in his condition, but rather because the persistent nightmares that shredded his mind each time he slept had forced him into a wakeful state. He had gradually managed to push himself into a seated position, his back pressed against the bed's wooden frame, and he had rested his injured arm in his lap. The dull